Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 12 of Spill the OT podcast. And today we have on an OT who works as a travel therapist. She does contracts in schools. She's in the California area and she'll be sharing her story. I myself have also done travel therapy. I don't know if you've listened to any previous episodes, but I did travel therapy for about a year and a half. And after talking to this woman, it gave me the serious travel bug. I just really enjoyed my experience doing travel therapy. But just to kind of give you two different point of views, I'll talk about what I liked about it, what I didn't like about it, and then you'll be able to hear her whole interview in a minute. So what I liked about it is obviously the traveling piece. I love our country and I wanted to see as much as I could. I remember when I was in college, I used to call my parents and I'd be like, okay, I'm moving to Montana. And then I would do like serious research and look up apartments and look up jobs and even apply to different jobs. And then, you know, maybe a month later, I'd be like, okay, I'm gonna move to California. And then same thing, I would end up researching, and I just always was drawn to different areas of the country. So I did that repeatedly. And then finally it occurred to me that maybe I'm not someone who was ready to settle down right away. So traveling would be like a good opportunity to try out different areas of the country and then, you know, decide where I wanted to settle down the road. So I started off playing it safe. I got a travel position in the state that I graduated in. So I was in Maryland and I started off working there. And that was a really nice transition because I was able to stay in my apartment. I felt like I was in a community I was already comfortable with, and it wasn't too shocking that way. So I just got to do the working piece. It was my first job. I did have a mentor and I felt pretty supported. So it was a really nice, easy transition into the working world. I will say that in hindsight, I recognize that a lot of what I was asked to do was not the most ethical. And I think that that's why I would say if you're a new grad, I would wait at least a year. I would wait at least a year so that you can see what a normal, average, ethical position looks like. And you can kind of build your own radar engaged for what's appropriate and what's not appropriate, because I did kind of feel pressure to pick up patients that weren't necessarily appropriate. I can't even imagine what our productivity was. I would say it was well over 100%. Just to share with you, since this podcast, I try and be as transparent as possible. I was given a handout from the CEO of the company. The CEO was very involved. And it was a smaller company. So he gave me a handout and it showed what you bill for independent and what you bill for concurrent. And the way it was phrased was, if it's a concurrent treatment, then it's two people doing the same exact exercises at the same exact time. If it's independent, then, or individual, sorry. If it's individual, then it's two or more people who are doing different personalized activities that the therapist is running, but it can be at the same time. Now, that is not true. Now that I'm more of a seasoned veteran out in the field, I fully understand that that's not true. It's very unethical. But, you know, back when I was 22, I really had no idea. There was only one other OTR, and he assured me, we graduated at the same school, he assured me that it was ethical, and I didn't do enough research and I just kind of followed blindly and went along with it. And that's why I would say it's better to have some experience or at least be in contact with somebody who's been out in the field so you can bounce questions off of them and say, hey, is this normal? Is this okay? Am I doing the right thing? Because I will say, even at the time, I did feel a little bit weird about it, but I kind of gave into that pressure. So that's just my two cents on that. So from there, I bounced around the country. I worked in four different states. I was licensed in five. And it was great to see our country. Most of the positions were in skilled nursing facilities. Most of them lasted about 13 weeks. Some of them were shorter. One of them I was asked to extend, so I extended longer. And overall, it was a really nice experience, but there were different placements where maybe I didn't necessarily feel totally included. For example, you know, the whole building might be attending a meeting, and then I would show up to the meeting and they'd say, oh no, this is for our employees. And then, you know, that's fine. I don't really like to sit in meetings anyway, but it was just kind of the phrasing of like us versus them a little bit. I didn't run into that too much though. So for the most part, I did feel very included wherever I went. And let's see, for the pay was awesome. I was making, I think on average, let's say like $1,500 take home. And that included my per diem stipend. And with that stipend, I would pay for my own housing from that, and I would buy my own food, and of course, all those types of things. So it was a tax-free stipend, let's say approximately $1,000. And then my technical rate was about $14 an hour at my placements. At the time, I didn't do a great job of negotiating. I tend to be kind of a, I don't know the right word, I guess like a little bit more meek, and something that I'm working on, but I think I could have negotiated that price a little bit higher had I had the confidence that I have now. But again, I was a new grad, so I just kind of went with the flow. They told me the rate. I asked for maybe like $10 more, and then they bumped me up for the $10 per week, which is really not much at all. Okay, other things. The placements themselves, I feel like you had to really choose either location or setting. So I chose mine based more on location, which meant most of my settings were in skilled nursing facilities. And I think if I were to try it now that I have kind of more varied experience, that might open up more doors. But as a new grad, I basically only had the experience of whatever travel position I started in. So I started in a skilled nursing facility. My next one was in a skilled nursing facility. My next one was in like an adult day rehab, more for like special needs adults. And then my third one was a skilled nursing facility slash outpatient, but it was kind of an outpatient kind of ALF, but it was phrased as an outpatient type of thing. So yeah, I think I only did four. When I found my recruiter, it really just kind of came to dumb luck. I talked to so many different recruiters, and it was actually kind of overwhelming because now, even still, I get so many phone calls a month by the recruiters. And it just so happened that I'd finally made the decision that I was going to do travel therapy. And that day, I think within the hour after talking to my family about it and really considering this option, I got a call from a recruiter. So she sort of got my business. She was sweet and she was kind, and she called at the perfect time. So that's how I chose my recruiter. I did stay loyal to her for two, and then I think I switched to somebody else because she had left. So I switched to a different company because I wanted to see what else was out there, and my recruiter was no longer available. Okay, so that's my experience as far as travel therapy. I think that just about sums it up. So let's get our friend on the line, and she will share about her experience in the school system as a contractor. All right, hi Devin, thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So I'm hoping you can be our expert on travel therapy.
Awesome.
Can you please share before we get started, like what year you graduated and what type of program you were in?
Yeah, so I graduated in 2015 with my master's degree. I was actually lucky to be able to do a combined bachelor's and master's degree program. So whenever I started college as an undergrad, I knew I wanted to be an OT. So all in all, the program took me about 5.5 years to complete with summers, but after that, you know, had the bachelor's and the master's and was ready to be an OT.
Oh, that's awesome. I actually did the same thing. So before you became a travel therapist, what fields did you initially start off in?
So I mostly did pediatrics, but honestly, my first day of work as an official OT was in home health. My pediatric company, that was my first job, had picked up an adult home health contract and needed coverage for it. So I had the availability in my schedule since I had just started there. So that was actually my first day of work, which is funny since I didn't intended to go into pediatrics. But, you know, a lot of my fieldwork experience was with adults. I kept up a PRN job in the SNF, you know, my first year out of school. And then once I did get into the pediatrics, I did outpatient pediatrics with a little bit of early intervention, a little bit of seeing kids in their homes and also at daycares and that kind of stuff. And then one of the daycares I went to was also kind of a preschool. So a little bit of school-based, but didn't get too into school-based until I started becoming being a travel therapist.
Okay. So can you speak about why you started to become a travel therapist and kind of what drove that decision for you?
So it was a combination of a lot of things. Travel has always been super important to me and always been something I've tried to prioritize just in my personal life. And I realized like 2 years into full-time employment, like I had not taken any major trip basically since I graduated. And so, you know, I realized that I wasn't really putting my money where my mouth was in regards to like saying travel was a priority for me. And part of the reason for that was because my job, like as much as I loved it, did not pay super well. The area where I went to school is pretty saturated with OTs. You know, the school I went to releases 2 graduating classes a year of about 30 OTs. And a lot of those people, you know, myself included initially, want to stay in that general area and work after they're done with school. So while I never had trouble finding a job, I definitely have trouble finding a job that paid anywhere near anything, you know, what I was told I would be making when I was in grad school. So it was kind of just a combination of both those things. I thought about doing travel for a while and had just like never really pulled the trigger on it. You know, I had a lot of ties back home that I wanted to keep up with. And then, you know, I don't know, something just changed where I was like, no, I think we're going to do this now. So I was able to get my boyfriend on board. He had a work from home job at the time, which made an easier transition. And so we were like, let's do it. Like, let's go do the travel thing.
Oh, that's awesome. So he was able to travel with you?
Yeah. Yeah. So we've been traveling together for just a little bit over a year now.
So how long had you been an OT before you started traveling?
Just a little bit over 2 years.
And how in the world did you go about picking a company and a recruiter? I did travel therapy for a couple contracts, and I still get bombarded with phone calls. I mean, probably every Monday, I think, is when they make their phone calls, and I'll get at least one phone call a week.
Yeah, I've had a similar experience as I think anyone who's like put a resume online has. You know, when I first got out of school, I signed up with a lot of agencies, like with the hopes of just finding a local contract. And of course, there never were any local contracts in the area where I live because it was so easy to find OTs. You know, you didn't need to go through an agency. I still got calls and emails and all that kind of stuff from people as much as I told them, like, no, you know, I'm not interested right now. But then when I did decide to travel, you know, I did it with some intention. And so I contacted my friends that I had known to do travel therapy and got some referrals from them for their recruiters. But you know, honestly, the first contract I took ended up just being one of those random email lists. Someone from Delta like sent me just a mass email that talked about a pediatric position in LA. I knew I wanted to make it out to the West Coast, whether that was California or Washington or Oregon. So yeah, I just did a cold email back and I was like, hey, like, is this LA position still available? And it wasn't, but there was a bunch of other positions available. And I ended up really liking that recruiter. So it ended up working out just kind of a chance.
Oh, that's exciting. Did you stay loyal to that company or have you kind of bounced around between different recruiting companies?
So far, I've only been with them. But I'm not opposed to working with a different company. You know, something that I always advise people when they are starting travel therapy is to work with a couple different recruiters, a couple different companies, just because it helps you keep your options open. You know, no company is going to have all the jobs all the time. And it can also help people who are not as experienced with travel therapy make sure that what they're getting paid and their benefits and all that kind of stuff is a fair deal.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So I've been happy with Delta. You know, they've been great to me so far, but, you know, nothing against them personally, but I definitely would not be opposed to working with someone else if they had the right job for me.
Hey everybody, I am so genuinely excited to tell you about MedBridge. So MedBridge is a continuing ed site and they have tons of continuing ed courses all available online. You can stream them at your own pace. They also have home exercise plans, which are incredible. You can literally build your own plan with pictures that can perfectly suit whatever client you're working for. It's honestly so awesome. And you get unlimited CEUs. And these CEU courses are just really intriguing and exciting. Like I've done continuing ed online in the past, and these ones that they select are just very much in line with what I find interesting, and I feel like you might find them interesting as well. So, are you struggling with finding the resources for your time for CEUs? With almost 2,000 accredited evidence-based streaming courses, live CEU webinars, MedBridge is your all-in-one solution. And actually, if you use my code, it's spill the OT, capital S, capital T, capital OT. So spill the OT, one word, capital S, capital T, capital OT. You can get $175 off of your year-long subscription, which is awesome. I mean, that's like significant amount of money off. So if you are interested, please go check it out. Again, use the code spill the OT, capital S, capital T, capital OT, all one word. All right. I really hope that you go check it out. Enjoy. How do you go about even like getting a placement? Like what's that process look like?
So you start out by, you know, getting in touch with a recruiter at one of these companies, whether that's, you know, from a personal recommendation or one of those email lists, or there are a couple recruiter matching services now available to travelers, which I'm super excited about. But, you know, you start out with a recruiter and then you'll have to fill out some information with them, you know, send them your resume, send them like a skills checklist, which just kind of goes over, you know, what you've already done as an OT, what areas you feel comfortable in and that kind of stuff. And then they will just start sending jobs your way. So with my recruiter, it was about a month, I think, in total of a process before, you know, I started contacting her and then had a job and had a contract. Yeah, they meet your requirements. Like if they're the locations and the settings you want, they'll send them to you. And then if you like them, you say, yes, go ahead and submit me. And all that means is they'll send your resume and your other paperwork over to the actual hiring facility. And then as long as the hiring facility likes it, you have a phone interview scheduled in usually a week or maybe even less. And then if that goes well and you like the job, that's it.
How much downtime between assignments do you typically have?
So I had no downtime between my first and second assignment, and I've only done school district assignments so far. So I've actually taken longer contracts than kind of what's typical for the industry if you're not working in the school system. So my first contract was from January to June, and I think the last day of school was like June 15th or something like that. And then my next contract was also a school system, but I actually ended up working summer school for them. And their summer school started on June 17th. So it was literally a turnaround of a weekend. You know, I had my last day Friday at the other school district, and I started at the new school district on Monday. So very short turnaround. You know, and from what I've seen, like from talking to other people and friends who do travel, sometimes it's like that. Sometimes it's like, oh, pack your bags, you're going. And then sometimes, you know, you will have to wait longer between contracts if you're trying to look for a specific setting or location, especially.
So does this company primarily do school contracts, or do they just place you with that because of your experience?
That was kind of the field that I was interested in going to. They do all sorts of contracts, you know, school-based and medical and whatever else. But I knew I wanted to try to stick to pediatrics. I was open to adults and I've worked with adults in the past, but pediatrics is definitely like where my love lies. So I knew I wanted to either do schools or outpatient or early intervention or something. And I was kind of interested in schools the most just because it was the setting that I had the least experience in. And another reason I did travel was to start getting experience in different settings and just become a more well-rounded therapist.
What about getting different licenses? Does the company help you with getting a different license or paying for that at all?
Yes. So pretty much every company that's like large enough has a credentialing department, and they will actually, they'll help you with your license all the way up to actually filling out paperwork for you and dealing with the state boards and that kind of stuff, which was really helpful. So when I first started looking, I was working with one company and they helped me apply for my California and Washington licenses at the same time. Just because those, as far as OT licenses go, can be a little bit longer to obtain compared to some other states. And travel world moves fast, so you kind of want to have those licenses ready if an assignment does come up that you want to take. So we went ahead and applied for those and got those knocked out. That way I could take any assignment that came up.
Yeah, because I know it varies state to state on how quickly the license can go through, but your recommendation is to just kind of get whatever states you might be interested in ahead of time?
Sort of. So I would try to keep it limited. You know, if there's definitely a place where you want to go and you're like dead set on it, like, yes, get that license for sure. Like, especially if it is one like California or Washington that takes longer to get approved. But you also don't want to get too many licenses, because then you start running into the difficulties of just all the bureaucratic nonsense that goes with having all these licenses in different states. So it hasn't been too much of a headache for me yet, because I only have my Kentucky and my California and my Washington license. But most of these states, when you apply to get a new license, will want verifications from all of the other states where you also hold an OT license, which isn't a big deal when you first start applying. But then, you know, if you do this for a while, you start to get a big pile of licenses, and then you have to wait on all those licenses to talk to those other states where you're getting a new license to verify that you have a license and you're in good standing and that kind of stuff. So definitely don't go crazy with getting licenses would be my advice. But if you have a couple states that you want to try to get to, start with those and then go from there.
That's really good advice. I think I've had like 5 state licenses, and because they were all within like 5 years, I still have to contact each of them. Like, say I wanted to get licensed in Kentucky, I would have to contact all 5 of those states and have it sent over, which like not only takes time, but it's really expensive. Like sometimes mm-hmm. it's $30 or $50 per state, and you know, some require background checks. It can get really exhausting.
Yeah, exactly. And two, the other reason I wouldn't advise just kind of going blind to getting licenses is because there are a lot of states or areas where there's just not as much need for OT. So you kind of want to focus on the states that like you are likely to find a job in, and you're likely to find something that you like, just because, you know, it is a lot of money and it adds up. And if you don't ever get to use that license, you're kind of just out of luck.
So at your current job or at all of your placements, do you feel like you get to be part of the team, or do you kind of feel like you're a more transient member?
I definitely feel like I get to be part of the team, but I'm also lucky in that way because I have taken contracts that are kind of longer. You know, typically if you're doing like a more medical contract or a contract at a SNF, you're probably going to be there for about 3 months in total. Whereas, you know, the first district I was at, I just worked the second semester, but I was still there for 6 months. And this district I'm working at now, you know, I did the summer school and I'll be there until the end of this school year. So I've definitely had more time to like, you know, get to know people and feel like part of the team. But I think there are ways to, you know, kind of get to know everyone and be part of the team, even if you are somewhere for a short time.
Do you have to wear like a special badge or anything that shows that you're kind of a separate entity than the school itself?
So far, no. So far at both of the districts, they've just given me their standard badge. Yeah, that's been pretty easy so far.
Good. And what about like filling out your time log? Do you send that to the school or do you send that to your contract company?
So it goes to both. There's a website, so I just fill it out electronically at the end of each week. And then it first goes to the school system for them to review and approve. And then once they approve the hours, then it gets sent to the contract company and they handle their end of things.
What would happen if, say, you got to a placement and the caseload was ridiculous and you just felt like ethically this was not an appropriate fit? Would you be able to contact your company and have them kind of negotiate or talk about it? Or would you kind of be responsible for talking to that school?
That actually did happen, this contract. You know, at my last district, I was lucky because everyone was super kind and supportive. And so I was new to school-based practice, but not pediatric practice, but they really helped me like learn all the ins and outs of the school system and IEPs and all that fun legislation. So by the time I left there, I had a pretty good handle on it. I thought, And then I got to this district and my caseload was almost double what it was in the last district. And I was like, oh no. And, you know, I'm pretty active online and like with mentoring and that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I always advocate for like, if your caseload is unmanageable, like reach out, like do something, like don't feel like that you are compelled to treat all these kids like if you can't do it. And so it was a little bit of a learning experience for me because I was like, oh, well, I guess I actually have to do that now and advocate for myself because this is just kind of a crazy amount of kids. And so I ended up doing both. I ended up both reaching out to my supervisor at the school district, but also reaching out to my recruiter. And, you know, my supervisor at the school district ended up being really receptive and open to feedback. It was her first year in that position. She had previously been working like as a special ed teacher, not an administrator. And so she was really open and, you know, she just agreed with me about a lot of it, which was really validating and nice because I was like, I don't know if this is what they just think is typical here. Like, I don't know if this is just how they expect people to be. You know, it wasn't like they were giving me a huge workload because I was a traveler. You know, all of the other OTs in the district had similar caseloads and just seemed kind of okay with it. And I was like, I don't know if I'm just like not aware of like what an appropriate caseload is, but this feels like too much. And, you know, she agreed with me and we worked out a plan to get it down to a reasonable amount.
When you were sharing approximately what that caseload was, I know that we have quite a few school therapists who listen to this, and we're probably in the same group, but I was in a group where people describe their caseloads, and it is so varied across the United States. It's blowing my mind.
Yeah, so my caseload, and I never got an exact number on it, because one of the frustrating things that happened was at the start of the school year, they had switched over to a new documentation system. And so I had been given my caseload at the start of the school year, which was about 55 kids, I think, starting out, which is like kind of a lot, but also like in the realms of manageable potentially, just depending on how many, you know, how many minutes the kids are seen, how often they're seen, how much is consult, that kind of stuff. But it was still like kind of a high number to start with, especially when the last district I worked for, my caseload topped out at 37. But then what happened was when they switched over to this new system, like all of the kids didn't get transferred over. So it would happen every week and like to the point of almost happening every day, honestly, the first month or two of the school year, that I would find out about a new kid that was supposed to be seen by me, but was not on my caseload, that I had never heard of, that the case manager hadn't contacted me about until they needed something. And then I was like, oh, well, here's another kid that I'm going to fit into the schedule that's already really full. So it would just keep happening. And that was one of the things that was like my breaking point to where I was like, oh, I need help. I need to advocate for myself because I can't keep having this happen to where, you know, my caseload gets totally insane and then I have another kid added to it the next day. So I think all in all, I think it topped out at like 67 before I was like, okay, we gotta figure this out. But you know, a lot of it was kids that like didn't actually need therapy anymore, kids that were like, you know, coming up to be discharged or maybe needed a little bit less therapy. So it was a process, but I was eventually able to discharge kids that really didn't need to be on caseload anymore and move a lot of kids to consult that really didn't need direct therapy anymore. So all in all, I think now, you know, at the middle of the school year, my caseload is 55 again. But it's a lot more manageable. And I think 10 to 15 of that is just consults that I see once a month or email with their teacher.
So. Well, I think that's admirable that you stuck it out. I think kind of an easy route would have been to say, hey, I'm a contractor. I don't need to really deal with this, and then kind of exit from there. So I think it's cool that you were, you know, able to step up and be the one to advocate for not just you, but sounds like other therapists in the area.
No, it was definitely a good experience and a good conversation that I think everyone had wanted to have or had tried to have and was just never very successful for one reason or another. So it actually helped us start, you know, looking at things like workload versus caseload models, looking at how we determine the needs for services and who stays on therapy, and just like kind of you know, setting the expectations for like, these are the kinds of kids that we see in the school system. This is the kind of stuff that we work on. Yeah, it just started a lot of really good conversations that I think everyone had been wanting to have.
So are you paid hourly or do they pay you kind of like a salary?
I'm paid hourly. I have guaranteed hours. At this placement, it's 37 and a half, and at the last placement, it was 40. But yeah, just hourly is how I'm actually paid.
And when you do your contract, do you get to negotiate that at all? Or is it kind of like set in stone, this is what we're going to pay you for the year?
There's definitely some room for negotiation. But what I've found is that there is no free money in travel. So even if you think you're negotiating sometimes about some things, it might just be like the contracting agency moving money around to make you happy, if that makes sense. Generally, like when a facility hires a contract therapist, they'll post the position and then they'll post this number that's called the bill rate. And so the bill rate is the rate that the contract agency will actually bill the facility per hour of your time. So say for this job, just to use an even number, let's say my bill rate is $50 an hour. Well, from that $50 an hour that I work, that some of that goes to the agency, some of that goes to their overhead for finding the position and the support from the recruiter. Then some of it goes to my hourly rate, and then some of it goes to my stipends rate, which is, you know, the tax-free housing and the tax-free meals. And then, you know, there's just so many other things that that bill rate can go into. And so once a facility sets that bill rate, like, it's kind of set. You know, at this point, they're using a contracting agency. They're already probably like in desperate need of a therapist. Like, they are probably offering like, you know, the highest that they can offer, or like very close to the highest they can offer. So I wouldn't say that you can't negotiate, but I would say just remember that it might just be someone moving money around to make you happier, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I know when I did travel contracts, they would offer the money and kind of present it in different ways. Like, we'll pay for your phone bill, but if they paid for the phone bill, then they're not going to do, you know, any tuition reimbursement. It's like they just kind of present it in different ways. But at the end of the day, you're getting the same pool of money.
Exactly.
So you don't have to answer this, but on my podcast, I like to kind of talk about what a lot of people don't talk about, which is salary. Could you share a ballpark of what a salary you would accept as a contracted school therapist in your area?
Yeah. So I can just be straight with you. At my first contract, which was in Northern California in a really rural town, I made about $1,600 a week after tax, which I know is hard to compare to like perm job numbers if you're used to hearing about like, you know, oh, I make $60,000 a year or something like that. But basically at that first job, you know, with both of my hourly rate and the rate that I was given in tax-free stipends, I cleared $1,600 a week. Now at this contract, I'm living in a more suburban area and an area that's like under a huge housing crisis. So I was originally offered about the same rate. I think it was a little bit closer to $1,700 a week, but still like $1,650 maybe. And then I looked at housing prices around here and I was like, oh, I don't think I can do that. Like, you know, I was able to make that work before because I was living in such a rural town that even though it was California, like, you know, things were pretty cheap comparatively. But here we're just a little bit south of the Bay Area, which is like one of the most expensive places in the entire country. And there's a huge housing crisis here and like in all of the surrounding areas. So not only were the apartments expensive, they were hard to find and, you know, sometimes like they would just disappear. And so I had had a lot of hesitancy accepting the second contract. But, you know, I took it back to my recruiter and I was like, hey, like, I don't think I can make this number work, like if I have to pay for housing. And then they were like, well, you know, what if we do the housing? And so company housing is something that like some therapists and other travelers I know like will never get. And they're like, oh, don't ever take company housing. It's a bad deal. It's such a ripoff. Like they're taking your money. And for me, it ended up actually saving me money. So they ended up putting me up in an apartment because we're going to be here for the entire school year. And the apartment itself costs like $3,600 a month, which is like, oh, just like disgusting to me. Like, it makes me feel like so uncomfortable to even, you know, even though I'm not the one signing the checks, I am paying $3,600 in housing costs a month. But the apartment itself costs that much. And then they also rented furniture for it. They also paid for a cable package and sent me an Amazon Fire Stick. And they also put us up in a pretty nice hotel the first week we were here while the apartment was still getting ready. And with all of that together, it was way more than what they were able to offer me in housing stipends. So I'm not exactly sure what kind of magic they pulled. You know, sometimes companies like that have agreements with like apartment rental places where they're able to get things for a cheaper price or get reimbursements later. So it's possible that that's what they were able to do. But I know that if I had been the one to rent this place personally, I would be paying like $4,000 a month in housing costs. And I'm not. So I was happy with company housing this time around, even though it's not always the right choice.
Yeah, that sounds it. That's crazy. I didn't realize it was that expensive. I knew it was like the most or one of the most expensive in this country. Can you share any advice to a therapist who might be considering to do travel therapy?
I would have so much advice, but I don't want to be overwhelming. definitely try to find a mentor if you can. You know, whether it's someone that has done travel therapy before, even if it's not an OT necessarily, could be a PT or a speech therapist or even a nurse, just someone who has like familiarity with the process. And then for whatever setting you're working in, especially if you're a new grad, like try to find like a clinical mentor that you can work with too and just go to with any questions, you know, because it's just with travel, like honestly, a lot of the time you're going to be alone or maybe be in a place where it's not always easy to find mentorship on the job. So just making sure that you have someone that you can go to if you do have any trouble is definitely important. I know that when I first started working in schools, even having 2 years of pediatric experience under my belt, schools are just different enough that I was calling my best friend who works in school-based practice like almost every day for the first couple weeks there, just asking questions and trying to learn everything I could about that setting.
Do you feel like companies offer mentors if you ask for them, or is it kind of you'd have to find somebody like a friend?
Some companies do, and I've never tried it personally, but what I have heard from other people is that even if they do like assign you a mentor, it's often not always easy to either get a hold of them or like, you know, find times where you guys can both make it work and talk because, you know, that mentor is another travel therapist who could be 3 time zones away from you and super busy as well. So I've definitely heard of companies offering mentorship, but so far I haven't heard too many success stories yet with it, but it could be out there.
Okay. That's good to know though. So you just kind of have to put it on yourself to try and find somebody who's maybe walked this road or a similar road before you.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, not every placement is going to like expect you to be a fully competent therapist treating everyone on day one with no questions. So don't feel like you can't reach out and ask questions of the people around you. You know, at my first contract, even though I was the only OT, there were other speech therapists, there was the director of special ed, there were people that I could reach out to about the process, even if it wasn't necessarily OT specific.
Oh, I have a question that just came to my mind. I know you have your 37 and a half hours. Does that include like paperwork time? Like if you knew that you had maybe like three years within the month, would they be able to extend and give you more money if you knew that you were going to be doing work at home?
Yes. And honestly, like I never take work home. I never work outside of contracted hours. I really make a point to advocate for that and advocate for other people doing that. You know, too often I hear stories from people talking about how they did a travel contract and they just took all their documentation home with them and they were working like 60-hour weeks but only getting paid for 40. And I'm just like, no, no, no. Like, please say no. Please stand up for yourself and advocate. You know, you should be able to get both your patient care done and your documentation done in those hours. And if you're not, then there's a problem. So definitely don't feel like you have to bear that burden. I definitely have all the time now to be able to do my paperwork within those allotted hours. You know, if there ever is a week where it's really crazy, like I could bill up to 40 hours and I don't think they would blink an eye. But if it ever did become a week there where I was needing consistent overtime, then I think that's another point where I would go and be like, okay, like this caseload's getting a little crazy again. Like, let's see what we can do about it.
Are there any questions that you wish I had asked you or anything else that you'd like to share with people?
I think that's the big part. Yeah, definitely just reach out for mentorship. There's a lot of good Facebook groups with travel therapists or even just like school-based therapy in general or SNF or whatever setting you're working in. So I participate in those all the time, both to ask questions and help out other people. Doing all the research you can before you start it and during the process of traveling. That way, like, if anything ever does happen, you're not surprised by it. You're kind of prepared to roll with the punches.
And this is just a question that I like to ask everybody. If you were 18 again and knowing what you know now, would you go into occupational therapy?
Yeah, I think I would. And it's funny that you asked that because since I did do that combined program, you know, I decided to be an OT when I was 17, which is coming up on 10 years this spring when I decided to apply into that program. And so it's just kind of funny, you know, even though I've only been practicing for going on 4, like just knowing that I was going to be an OT for 10. And, you know, I still feel the same as I did 10 years ago. I'm super happy with the profession. You know, even with all the challenges that come along with it, I don't think I would have done anything differently.
That's awesome. That's really exciting to hear.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on here.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. This is a good project. Bye.
All right, guys. So a huge thank you to Devin for coming on and talking to us about traveling OT. And as always, if you can please rate and review this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever platform you're listening to it, that would be awesome. Please follow me on Instagram at spill_the_OT. And if you would like to be on the show or if you have any questions, just email me at spilltheot@gmail.com. All right. Bye, guys.